Shrink Wrap Radio number 46, August 11th, 2006, The Narcissistic Personality. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
There's a sense of the narcissist having no conscience, of feeling like, if I hurt your feelings, well, too bad, it's your problem. I don't have any responsibility for that. So the lack of guilt, that's really what I'm talking about here, is that the other person really feels righteous about whatever they do. And so the other person is left in their wake wondering what the heck happened to them.
That was the voice of Dr. Maria Hess. From time to time, I get requests from listeners asking for more coverage of the various diagnostic categories, such as depression, autism, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and so on. So it's in that spirit that I invited today's guest to talk about the narcissistic personality. Regular listeners will recall Dr. Maria Hess, who I interviewed on Teaching with Passion back in episode number 20. Maria regularly teaches a class on abnormal behavior at Sonoma State University, where I taught for most of my own career. And it's worth mentioning that she was a recent winner of that university's Excellence in Teaching Award. Now on to the interview.
Hi, Maria. Welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio. Now, the last time I interviewed you, it was about teaching psychology with passion. Well, one of the courses that I know you teach with a great deal of passion is psychopathology. And I've had a few letters from listeners requesting more coverage of topics relating to to abnormal behavior and to the diagnostic categories. So I immediately thought of you as a great guest to delve into that sort of thing.
Thanks, David. I appreciate you thinking of me.
Okay. So I know one of the areas that you are particularly interested in is the narcissistic personality. So let's focus on that today. Now, I'm not current on the DSM. What's the terminology today? Is it called narcissistic character disorder or narcissistic personality disorder?
It's a narcissistic personality disorder, but for most clinicians and people who work with the DSM, personality and character are kind of interchangeable when they talk about this level of pathology.
Right. Okay. Well, let's start off then by defining what a personality disorder is.
One of the fundamental characteristics of a personality disorder or character disorder is when a person has a particular way of being or interacting in the world, which isn't necessarily problematic for them, but is problematic for people who interact with them. What makes it of character, right, is that it's an internal structure. It's not something that changes over time. So, in other words, if I'm arrogant or I'm condescending or patronizing, I'm consistently that way. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really vary with stimuli.
Right. It's kind of a deep personality trait that's sort of always been there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Of course, when you say, you know, it's not troubling to the person, but it's troubling to others, that right away conjures up for me political considerations, you know.
I'm not clear. What do you mean?
Yeah, I'm not being terribly clear about it. I'm thinking of some of the critiques of psychiatry and psychology, some of the social political critiques that suggest that people don't have problems, but that it's the problems that people have with people.
Oh, I
that
see.
Creates the problem.
I see, yes. Well, here, what I mean by that, and it very well may be political, but really there are certain things, behaviors that are congruent, that are off-putting to other people. So I think that even if it were in the political realm, and whose problem is it kind of thing. There is much agreement around the constellation of the challenges for the person with narcissistic personality disorder. I mean, things like, you know, shamelessness, an incredible set of arrogant, kind of patronizing behaviors and ideas and attitudes about other people.
Okay.
Really, almost, it kind of butts up against antisocial personality disorder in some way, because there's a sense of the narcissist having no conscience, of feeling like, if I hurt your feelings, well, too bad, it's your problem. I don't have any responsibility for that. So the lack of guilt, so that's really what I'm talking about here, is that the other person really feels righteous about whatever they do. And so the other person is left in their wake wondering what the heck happened to them.
Yeah. I was going to ask you to define narcissistic personality, and maybe you just did. Mm-hmm. Are there any other features that...
Sure. There's a sense of entitlement, a feeling that I deserve and you don't. There's a sense of not needing to explain or be held accountable to anybody else. A feeling of that if I can use you to better serve my own needs, then that is my prerogative. And there's also a sense of boundarylessness in the narcissistic personality disorder, that sense that goes along with entitlement, that if I want or I need something that you're doing or thinking or believing, I have a right to cross over and kind of impose on you.
Yeah. Is it just me, or aren't we all a bit narcissistic? Like, how do I tell whether my own narcissism or my friend or my family member's narcissism verges into the pathological realm?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I could digress just a tad here, because
sure, there
is a sense of healthy narcissism, and we do all possess healthy narcissism if all goes well. I mean, healthy narcissism is that part of ourselves that wants to do well, wants to set goals and meet them, wants to look our best, feel our best, be recognized for our strengths, mm-hmm. Be encouraged to do more of whatever we do well,
right?
But where it comes into pathology would be, say, for example, you say something to me and I feel like you're being arrogant, or you're implying that somehow you're better than I and I'm this poor schmo that doesn't really understand. I can go to you and say, David, you know, you said this and it may just be the way I heard it, but it hurt my feelings. And you might say, oh my gosh, I certainly wasn't meaning to hurt your feelings. Let's talk about that and kind of resolve it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had the narcissistic personality disorder, I would say that. They'd say, too bad. You know, it's your problem. Don't even bother with me about it. There would be no reckoning or desire to want to have any kind of contact with you in it. Mm-hmm. There's a sense about the person with the narcissistic personality disorder that they're kind of insulated unto themselves. So there's this little sense that they're walking around in their own universe, more so than most of us do anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like my little universal bubble is better than your universal bubble.
Right. Do you have any good stories or case histories that would help us to better understand this narcissistic personality?
Well, you know, I guess what I have in my mind when you ask me that question is kind of like a compilation of many narcissistic types that I've interacted with. There seems to be a particular set, at least in psychotherapy. When working with a narcissistic personality in psychotherapy, it's very difficult to get any history about childhood. They feel very protective of their own family and family dynamics. There's a sense that everything was perfect. These clients often say, I don't know why, they usually come to therapy because their partner asks them to, or they have some physical problem with their looks. They start, men start balding, start losing their looks in their face, women start losing their bodies, that which they used to kind of attract the opposite sex. So oftentimes the client, and it looks very similar, this is also indicative of the personality disorders. The stories change a little bit, but the process is very similar person to person across the board. And there's this sense of, you can't really help me. I'm here to please somebody else. There's really nothing wrong with me. And you people are all screwed up for thinking that there is. You just don't see my brilliance.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing. very a sense of like people who I might consider or you might consider to be average looking, who speak about themselves as like God's gift to women or men, not being able to see themselves accurately. So that when they look in the mirror, they see, you know, a hunk, you know, buff kind of a guy. But when you and I are sitting across from them, they are not that.
Yeah.
So there's this kind of skew in a self perspective that seems to be pretty congruent with clientele that have the disorder.
Yeah, your description brings to mind somebody that I know, and I won't say who, but somebody I know fairly well, who's an older person at this point in their life, and a person who came from another country. And every week, this person looks forward to getting a call from her sister, who's in the old country. Now, if I ask this person, well, what's going on with your sister? They had no idea.
That's right.
The sister's life is not important.
That's
right. As a matter of fact, the sister had to go into the hospital for a while for cancer. But when I asked this person I'm referring to about that, it was like, oh, it was more like that was an annoyance that got in the way of the weekly phone call.
Absolutely. You know, a really good character is that makes me think of this Mary Tyler Moore in Ordinary People. She's a great representation of what a narcissistic person might look like in the moment. It's very, in spite of this deep suffering that her husband and her son is doing in the movie, she's like removed, kind of insulated from it, and then sees them as kind of weak and beneath her rather than wanting to help them soothe their difficulties or their suffering in any way. There's a real disdain for suffering of any kind, lack of compassion for homelessness, people who have illnesses, or there's an intolerance for the lesser. Right, there's always this focus on better, 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 better.
That really fits the person that I'm thinking of. You spoke to this a little bit. I wanted to ask you, what would bring this sort of person into therapy? Because presumably, since they're so narcissistic, they're feeling really good about themselves. So, you know, where's their pain?
Yeah, well, usually would bring, like I said, it's either a mate that sets some kind of limit, that says, you know, either you learn how to be receptive to my feelings and you listen to what I need from you, or we can't go on. Or this desperate sense of losing a career personality, physical sense of identification, some way of coming and falling off their own pedestals. It's hard to deny that one is aging when one is balding, for example.
Yeah, I was just going to say aging. Yeah,
that's
aging.
A real big one. Yeah. So there is a resistance to aging, a feeling like that I, as the narcissist, should somehow be able to do the workaround around Mother Nature, right? So there is this feeling of failing in some way.
Yeah.
So the suffering actually is quite deep for narcissists once they access it. And in the therapy, it can be very difficult to work with the client to access it. But to start with, the physical stuff is often very helpful for them because that is what they too can see.
Yeah.
So that's a place of beginning.
Going back to this person that I'm thinking of, they're confronting old age and a considerable amount of loneliness because they were so narcissistic that they never really developed any interests, any outside interests, any hobbies, any techniques for engaging other people about what they're interested in. So now this is a person who's living in a assisted living sort of situation but can't really connect with any of the other people.
Sure, it's very, 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 very typical of those. And a sense, too, that nobody has anything to offer them. There's really that deep sense that there's nobody has anything that they need.
Yeah.
So very often, and you know, the rule of thumb with personality disorders, at least as I've studied it, is that it can go one of two ways. Going into middle age can actually be the land of many chances for somebody to change their life and to really confront the suffering of being so separate,
okay.
Or it just gets more constellated. It sounds like that's the case that's happened with the person that you're talking about. And that can make for a very lonely, very painful, very difficult old age.
Yes.
It's like the life the unexamined life that is not worth living, that kind of thing, that the person who has this unexamined life doesn't have the richness of the weaknesses and the failures that have then created the depth of the successes.
Yes.
So without the willingness to kind of dip down, the highs don't have the same kind of meaning as it gets older. You're beating the drum endlessly, and you lose people. People get tired of it. They don't want to be around you anymore.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of loneliness that happens as you get older.
I have seen that. I've seen that. Now, doesn't the fact that it's considered to be a personality disorder suggest that it's so fundamental to the person's makeup as to be very difficult to change?
It is. And it's mixed, you know, in the clinical literature, it's mixed. Some people really believe that, like Stephen Johnson wrote this incredible book called The Characterological Transformation, and he talks about slow work with the client, developing a relationship, which is the hardest part because the person doesn't see you having any value, so it can be tough. But if you can just stay with it and help the client see what they lose as a result, there can be some sense of aha about it. Okay. But I don't know that they lose the narcissistic personality disorder. I think more, like with all personality disorders, what psychotherapy helps with is shows the detriment of it and then helps them learn management skills in spite of their disorder.
To sort of work around it?
Do the workaround. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, really find a way to kind of manage it.
Yeah. So you mentioned, was it Stephen Johnson, did you say?
Stephen Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Johnson. Are there other approaches that other people take, or is that sort of the main one?
Well, no, Stephen Johnson has his own way of talking about this. James Masterson is really probably the main person in the clinical literature that really has taught psychotherapists for years and years about dealing with characterological difficulties. There's other like pop culture stuff, like Sandy Hotchkiss wrote a book called Why Is It Always About You? And this book is phenomenal because it takes a very common sense approach to narcissism, but really her fundamental belief, and many clinicians share her view, is how to help people who are in the vicinity of narcissists.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't really, her premise is, look, you can't really do much about somebody who has a narcissistic personality, so you're not going to change them.
Yeah.
But you can do things so that you're not at the mercy of them in the same way.
Yeah, well, that really leads into one of the questions I wanted to ask, which is, if one of our listeners has a friend or a relative or a fellow employee whose narcissism is driving them up a tree, how do you suggest they deal with that person?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that getting some support and talking to somebody who will hear what they have to say and be receptive to their feelings could be very helpful, because once you reach critical mass in relationship with a narcissist, you're feeling a little crazy-making yourself. You know, you're feeling a little crazy yourself because it's like, how can this be, right? And this book is helpful, this Why Is It Always About You? I think that that's probably one of the best workbooks I've ever really seen about how to move through.
Yeah.
So, like, making sure that you can say it out loud and get validated for your experience and not and kind of move out of the bubble that there's something wrong with you. Because for sure, when you're in the relationship with a narcissist, that's how you feel. No matter what you do or what you say, you are always in the detriment. Mm-hmm. And that can't just be, that can't be right, right? You can't have somebody who's always right.
Yeah.
And that's a real clue.
Yeah.
So support is really a big deal. And then getting informed, and really getting informed, and hopping off the bus that you're going to be the one that's going to change them. Mm-hmm. That's also really a big deal, especially if they're a family member or somebody that you love.
Yeah. Has there been any sort of evolution over time in terms of how the diagnosis or the treatment is viewed by professionals?
I think so. And I don't know that many people would agree. I really don't know, because in some way, you know, when you're an academic and when you're working clinical practice, you kind of get in your routines of how you learn and who you read and all that kind of thing. But what I'm starting to see around narcissism is that there seems to be more and more information that's coming about that narcissism has a spectrum. And, you know, there's always been some kind of implication about that as I've studied the material, but now it's becoming more overt that there's a spectrum of narcissism, so that when we get to the higher level of narcissism, it's where we have that kind of cutthroat mentality of, you know, no matter wanting to, like, demolish the other, right? And then there's the lesser, where people just have, like, characteristics of narcissism, and they have a propensity towards arrogance or a propensity towards boundarylessness. But again, on the lower levels, there are people that you can confront. You can say things like, well, that hurt my feelings, or I wish you wouldn't do that, or why are you doing that? And they respond. Mm-hmm. The response is really the key for the clinician. Like, if that person can respond and can give kind of a variety of responses and not just the same one, like, you're wrong, I'm right, then you have more of a way in. So the spectrum really shows in so far as how the give and take of the relationship goes, if there's a give and take.
Yeah. Now, you've got some background in object relations, as I recall. You're interested in object relations theory. So I'm wondering if you know, what's the viewpoint of how narcissism develops?
Yes. Well, from the object relations perspective, which is, you know, a psychoanalytic, kind of depth-oriented way of looking at things, and it focuses really very much on the first 3 years of childhood life with between the child and the parent. And what they talk about is that how fundamental development for the first 16 months of life is really the child having this sense that there is no other. They and mother are one thing, right? So there is no other. And as they come into an awareness that mom isn't me, and they have a way of relating to her out there and me here, right? You, mom, and me here, then I start having this sense of being important to you. And during that period of time, this is known as the practicing phase, where I'm really practicing being a brand new human, practicing walking, talking, grabbing a hold of things, succeeding, accomplishing my independence as a toddler,
right.
That I then have the opportunity of being the center of the universe. So this is the time of life where the kid spins around in the middle of the living room when all the adults come along and they want you to say, aren't you the swellest? My gosh, look at that baby. There's nobody that's as good as you. And they get this sense of, pride would not be the word, but in the adult world, that's what we might call it, is pride.
Yeah.
This sense of omnipotence, the center of the universe.
Right.
When that is allowed and tolerated and supported and encouraged and nourished, then the child can integrate back a sense of this healthy narcissism I was talking about earlier, and then move on to other tasks. When it's not received well, and it's usually not received well when one has a narcissistic parent, by the way, and the parent can't handle the quote-unquote competition for the center stage, the child is kind of diminished or maybe quelled or ignored or punished.
Yeah.
And then that need to be special, to be seen as different and unique, goes underground. And then that becomes the piece that continues to need to be relived throughout one's life.
So they become kind of stuck in that place.
They are.
And they really get a double whammy because they got the modeling from the narcissistic parent.
That's right. Yes. And there's a sense of real deep loneliness behind this grandiosity.
Mm, yeah.
So there's a feeling of never being seen. So even though the person themselves might not acknowledge to you, gosh, I'm suffering from my sense of grandiosity, it becomes clear to those of us that watch that there's this sense of emptiness to this person, that because they never get filled up with a sense of their own self. They're needing to be reflected by the world and told continuously how important they are, because there's no there inside of them.
Yeah. As I listen to you say that, I'm experiencing a little bit of medical student syndrome, which is, in case anybody isn't familiar with that, anybody who's ever taken a course in abnormal psychology or taught it has had the experience of seeing themselves in every diagnostic category.
Absolutely. Oh, and teaching is just the worst. Totally.
Yeah, so as I hear you describe it, you know, I'm sitting here remembering myself saying, Mommy, Mommy, look at this. Look at me. Look at me.
Totally. Yes. And that's your job at that age, is to be the star in the center stage. I think we can all relate to narcissism in some way.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
I think a lot of it has to do with the culture is in love with narcissists. We love them.
We live in a narcissistic culture, right?
I think so. I mean, you can't be too rich. You can't be too thin. We make heroes out of people who do what? I don't know, show up on, you know, Star Search or whatever that movie, you know, that we make heroes out of people who do things that in and of themselves may not be necessarily that which deserves, quote unquote, the aggrandizement we give them. We love stars.
Like Donald Trump. Who would appear to be just a huge narcissist.
Yes,
right?
He does.
He just labels everything Trump. Yes. Everything is Trump. Everything is about Trump.
Totally, yes.
And so we worship people. I hadn't thought about this, but you're right. We worship people who have somehow succeeded in their narcissism on a grand scale.
Yes, and it usually has to do with earning capacity and public recognition. It's not who you are necessarily, as what you do and what you get paid to do.
Right, right.
And how you look.
Yeah.
Because how you look is a big deal in this culture, huh?
Yeah.
So we aggrandize for things that really don't have much internal substance. And I'm working off of a stereotype here. I mean, you know, this is a pretty big conversation we're having. And I'm painting in a pretty broad stroke, you know.
Okay.
And if I were in a clinical setting, of course, I would be looking at things much more particular. But to talk on a bigger scope, this is more of the generalizations.
Right, right. Is there anything more that you'd like to add about narcissism that I failed to ask?
Well, you know, the last thing I guess I would like to say is that I also think that there are a lot of strengths that people with narcissistic personality disorders do show, and insofar as they're often people who are willing to take risks in ways that other people do not, and if you don't need anything from them, they can actually be fairly good role models as far as how to break boundaries around the feelings of what one can and can't do. There's a way that we can look at them as far as learning about self-esteem, insofar as how to hold a sense of success, right? And I without the hollowness that goes along with it. But there's a way that we can look at it as some kind of a strength, too. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Okay, great. Well, Maria, thank you so much for spending time with us again.
Sure.
And I'm probably going to be hitting you up from time to time. We'll go through some more diagnostic categories because I think there are people out there that are really curious about these.
You bet. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I sure hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Maria Hess. As most of you already know, the term narcissism is based on the Greek myth of Echo and Narcissus. The version most of us have been exposed to is found in Ovid's Metamorphoses. A graceful and pretty nymph named Echo loved Narcissus in vain. Narcissus's beauty was so unmatched that he felt it was godlike in scope and comparable to the beauty of Bacchus and Apollo. As a result, Narcissus spurned Echo's affections until, despairing, she faded away to nothing but a faint, plaintive whisper. To teach the vain boy a lesson, the goddess Nemesis doomed Narcissus to fall in love with his own reflection in Echo's pond. Entranced by his own beauty and enamored with his own image, falling deeply in love with himself, he leaned closer and closer to his reflection in the water, eventually falling into the pond and drowning. According to Wikipedia, the word Narcissus derives from the Greek word narke, meaning numb, from which we also get the word narcotic. They go on to say that for the Greeks, Narcissus stood for vanity, callousness, and insensitivity, as he was emotionally numb to the entreaties of those who fell in love with his beauty. Thinking back to Maria Hesse's remarks on narcissism, it would seem that the narcissist is relatively numb to the world of others, numb and untouched by their joys, their hopes, their pains, and their anxieties. There's a line in Woody Allen's latest movie, Scoop, in which his character speaks of his religious orientation, saying, "I used to be of the Hebrew persuasion, but I converted to narcissism." Another one of my favorite lines in regards to the narcissist is that he or she wants to be the bride at every wedding and the corpse at every funeral. I couldn't help squirming in my chair a bit during this conversation with Maria. I come by my own narcissism honestly. Both my mother and her mother, my grandmother, were fairly narcissistic people. I've worked to suppress it in myself. Certainly the combination of marriage and parenthood have helped to sand down the more blatant manifestations. But there is probably more than a fair amount of narcissism lurking in my own shadow. Narcissists also tend to see themselves as the hero of the story, perhaps sometimes to the extent of lying about themselves. But as they say, enough about you, let's talk about me. Speaking of lying, did I ever tell you the story of the time I won the liars contest at the county fair in Lolo, Montana? No? Well, once again, journey back with me to yesteryear. I'm a graduate student at the University of Montana, and I see a flyer advertising the upcoming county fair in Lolo, which at the time is no more than a wide spot in the road, somewhat south of Missoula. What catches my eye on this flyer is that there's going to be a greased pig contest. I'll save my greased pig story for another time, but suffice it to say, I'm really stoked by the idea of a greased pig contest. Though I'm normally a pretty modest and quiet sort, the greased pig thing has such a resonance for me that for weeks I'm going around telling everyone that I'm going to win the greased pig contest in Lolo. Well, the long-awaited day does roll around, and I do win the grease pig contest, but that's a story for another time. Flush with victory, I notice that there's a liars contest going on in an adjacent area to the pig corral. There's a flatbed trailer truck there, and they have an announcer and a microphone and a line of folks queued up to tell tall tales. At the moment, there's a guy up there telling a story of how he caught a big fish. And when he took it home and he cut it up, there was a smaller fish inside it. And when he cut that one up, there was an even smaller fish inside that one. And so on, all the way down to a really tiny fish. As he's telling the story, I'm thinking to myself, surely I can do better than that. As soon as the guy is done with his fish story and disregarding the long line of liars patiently waiting their turn, I jump up onto the flatbed trailer and I grab the microphone. In a loud voice, I announce, "Attention! Attention, everybody! Attention! I need your attention!" People at other nearby exhibits and attractions stop what they're doing and turn around to listen. "Folks, I'm awfully sorry, but we've just received word from the sheriff's department that a big storm is headed this way." In fact, the skies have turned a bit dark and cloudy, which gives some credence to my claim. "We're sorry, folks, but we're going to have to close down the fair. Everyone go home. The fair is closing. Everyone go home now." And indeed, crowds start streaming away. The MC, who's been running the liars contest, is so stunned that he's momentarily paralyzed. Then he comes to his senses and grabs the microphone, saying, "Folks, folks, come back. The fair is not over. That was the biggest liar of them all. Well, imagine my shock when they award the Liars Contest prize to some other guy. Evidently, my lie is so big, it isn't even considered part of the event. Now, in my mind, I think I won that Liars Contest in Lolo, Montana. Don't you?
Psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
Thanks again to the incomparable Jeff Smith for the Shrink Wrap Radio jingle. Are you singing it in your sleep yet? Well, I've just shared another of my treasured stories. I'm hoping it said something about narcissism without being too narcissistic. And speaking of narcissism, you can buy the domain name ilovemyselftopieces.com for only $6.95 per year if you use the code SHRINK3 on checkout at godaddy.com. We've got some new additions to our Frapper map that shows where listeners are located. We have Michael C. in Baghdad, Iraq. Hey, Michael, we have one other listener in Iraq. I'm wondering if you're in the service. Please drop me a line and let me know what's going on with you there in Iraq. You can write me at shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. We also have Jennifer Linton, who we featured in an earlier podcast, and she finally got around to putting herself on the map. Thank you so much for that, Jennifer. We've got Kimberly in Benfleet, England, UK, and Solastip in Oregon. And Joe, who didn't tell me where he is, and a Dr. Woozy, I hope I'm saying that right, in Greece. And I would sure love to hear from you. You would be our first listener in Greece. We have Tim in Sydney, Australia, and Tiffany in Burbank. Now, don't forget, you can win a free autographed copy of the book I co-authored, in which I profile the infamous Zodiac serial killer. All you have to do is put yourself on our Frapper map by going to frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio, or you'll find a link on our website at shrinkwrapradio.com. And also, don't forget to drop me an email if you're at all interested in attending the workshop I'll be co-leading in Tuscany, Italy from September 18 to 24. All you folks in Europe, it's close by and time is running out.
Hi, this is Mike from Cape Town, South Africa, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Mike in South Africa, thanks very much for that voice message, which I was pleased to find in my Skype voicemail box. I'd love to get more voicemails like this from you listeners. You can do it right on our site using MyChingo, or you can send me an MP3, or you can leave me a voicemail message on Skype, which is what Mike did. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave voicemails on Skype, and there our name is ShrinkPod. You can also leave live messages right on the website. If you have a mic hooked up to your computer, just look for the bright green MyChingo logo on the left side of the page and click on that. Now let's get on to some of the recent emails from listeners. First, we hear from Karen, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I've just listened to the DNA of Leadership, which was a great interview. The whole thing brought me back to my old hometown, Philadelphia. the city of brotherly love, or brotherly love, a DJ from the area from my youth. I'm a transplanted Yankee living in oh-so-southern Virginia. Yes, I'm on the Frapper map, and even though it's been more than half my life, it's still a culture shock sometimes. I love the idea about doing a Daily Minute type of show and would definitely subscribe. Both of the suggestions you gave are good ideas, and mixing it up would also be a good idea, in my humble opinion. I work in public welfare, and my current responsibilities include helping clients find and want to find employment. One thing a good friend and coworker is working on, using podcasting as a means of communication with clients in the attempt to enable them to become more tech savvy. That's a great idea. We're heavily influenced by Gladwellian principles, a.k.a. The Tipping Point and Blink. Yeah, I'm very influenced by Malcolm Gladwell's writings as well. And boy, would I ever love to get him as a guest, but I think he gets something like $100,000 per appearance, so it's not too likely. Back to the letter. Also, the new shrink wrap jingle is growing on me as the weeks go by. Keep up the good work, Karen S. P.S. I'm also the one who wrote the review on iTunes. Well, I thank you for that, and I found your review, and it was one of the good ones. I recently got a bad one there, so I hope a lot of people write good ones to counterbalance the bad one. But everybody is entitled to express their opinion, whatever it is. I was recently interviewed on the BBC about Shrink Wrap Radio, and Stephen Cotterill, who lives in the UK, sent an email complimenting us on that and also suggesting a possible guest for the future. So thanks for dropping that line, Stephen. Joshua writes to say, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I was wondering if you can give me some mind game tips and tricks. The reason why I ask this is because as I get older, now 21, I notice many people tend to test you with mind games. My first reaction is to fight so they don't think that they can keep playing with me, but it would be nice to know how I can put a stop to it with words or using their same tricks on them. Any advice would be much appreciated. Thank you." Well, Josh, my first piece of advice is don't fight. There's already too much fighting and violence in the world. You're on the right track in terms of wanting to put a stop to it with words. And I hope you will write me with more detail so that I can better understand what you mean by mind games, and then perhaps I can solicit some help from our listeners who may have some good ideas about how to cope with that sort of thing. We also got an email from Sylvia, who's been having trouble leaving a My Chingo message, which I keep urging people to do, and this is her second try, and for some reason it's not working for her. I suspect, Sylvia, that you need to have Java installed on your computer. She writes, "Hey, Doc Dave, I'll try again maybe with Skype. Thanks for the mention. The podcasts are excellent. Can't say the same for the last one's recording quality, but I know things will get better." Yes, I hope they will. Even this one, and this present one, is not as good as it's going to be in the future, I can tell you. That is in terms of the interview recording. She goes on to say, "I would love to find some resources on how to fit meditation into one's busy daily routine, how to cut out meditation moments out of your day, and if there's a recommended minimum time to dedicate so it won't be completely useless. I am religiously asking my dreams the same question for a few nights and trust that something will come out. Thanks again, Sylvia." Well, Sylvia, the very act of creating the discipline in your life is a major step on the spiritual path. And there probably is no really easy trick for doing that. It just takes doing it. And it might mean getting up earlier in the morning. That's what many people do. However, you did talk about how to fit it into one's daily routine, how to cut meditation moments out of your day. And the essence of meditation is bringing attention to what you're doing. So it is possible to take a meditative attitude, to be very conscious during certain tasks that you do. Certainly waiting in line is one place where instead of getting all irritated, you can just really focus on quieting your mind and moving into a meditative space. But I think there's probably no substitute in the final analysis for setting aside some time every day to practice the meditation so that your practice will deepen. And I will be having a major meditation teacher on in a future podcast, one that's been recommended to me by Charles Tart. And this teacher is on my to-do list. I received a very nice newsy letter from Paul Moore, my friend in Ireland, who attended the workshop that I led there last spring. And I won't read the entire letter, but there is a place here where he remarks on one of our recent shows. And he says, I heard your Happy Birthday, Dr. Freud show with Doug Davis. It was great. I really enjoyed it. And I checked out Doug's website and will have a look at a couple of his papers. They seem interesting. The episode was a nice overview of Freud, and there was something in it for everyone. I would say I certainly got a lot from it. And I think it's good to have a guest like Doug Davis, who is not one of these Freud fundamentalists. He seems to have a great objective take on it, which is where I like to see myself coming from on Freud. I remember a seminar we had on the Oedipus complex, and suddenly realizing that if you pan back from the sexual emphasis, you can see it being a metaphor for a whole lot of other dynamics, most noticeably power. And I remember thinking about how Jung felt that libido was not just sexual energy, but life energy, and how appropriate this was in the context of the Oedipus complex. I really got the sense of Freud having stumbled on something within the confines of his own theory that had wider-reaching implications, or wider-reaching applications, but he was somehow blinkered by the time and culture he lived in. It was also nice to hear you give neuropsychoanalysis a mention, and I will be dusting off my dissertation before I meet Professor Fitzgerald, who's a professor that he has who's into neuropsychoanalysis and we're hoping to induce into being a guest sometime in the future. And Paul, I'm glad to hear that you're thinking about attending our workshop that's coming up in September in Tuscany, and I really hope you can make it. And that's the mail for today. You can send your email to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. There's now yet a new way to access Shrink Wrap Radio, by the way. You can do it by going to shrinkwrapradio.podshow.com. The Podshow site has a number of features designed to help you subscribe to your favorite podcasts. There's even a place where you can leave your reviews of Shrink Wrap Radio there. So I hope you leave some of the good comments you've sent by email to me here so that others might be attracted to the show. And please help spread the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. If you've got a podcast, a blog, a MySpace, or a LinkedIn page, give us a plug there. And many thanks to April Fresh Goddess, who's been working on prettifying our MySpace site, which you can see at www.myspace.com/shrinkpod. And to wrap things up, thanks again to Dr. Maria Hess for her insights on the narcissistic personality. As I'm sure you're aware, there's a war going on right now between Israel and the Hezbollah in Lebanon. Our next show will feature an interview with a radio psychologist in Israel. Thanks to the Ron Hellman Jazz Ensemble, who provided the jazz track behind my Liars contest story. You'll find their tune, Old Folks, on the PodSafe Music Network. Apropos of Sylvia's email question about meditation, we close with a PodSafe number titled Be Here Now by Freedom People. You'll find a link to this tune in our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Be here now, be here now, be here now. continuum of space and time. Synchronicity, the rhythm of the I am. Be here now, be here now, be here now. Be here now, be here now, be here now. Be here now, be here now, be here now. Be here now, be here now, be here now. Everything and everything in one.